Good morning, everyone, on this beautiful day. All very welcome to this service in the Dublin Unitarian Church in St. Stephen's Green. We welcome not only the people here in the church, but the community of people joining us on the webcam and people who might listen to the service afterwards on the recordings page on our website. My name is Tony Brady. I'm a member of the congregation here, and we have a tradition of an open pulpit, which means that maybe once a month, a member of the congregation leads the service, and it gives our minister, Reverend Gavin Bourne, a Sunday off. It also provides for a variety of opinions and a different voice. So today it's my turn to welcome you here. We've come here together from many places, each of us with our own thoughts and concerns. So we need to first of all relax, take a breath, and gently bring ourselves into this present moment before we have our opening words. Ours is a living tradition. We don't look to ancient texts to tell us what to think. We look to love to tell us how to live. With love as our doctrine, every act of kindness is a hymn. And with love as our first principle, every stand for justice is a prayer. Welcome to this community of love. Wherever Unitarians gather in prayer, reflection, and in the search for meaning, a chalice is lit, which I will light now. As we light this chalice, we remember the courage of those who have struggled for freedom, the persistence of those who have worked for justice, and the love of those who have built beloved communities to carry forward the light of hope. Let us pray. Spirit of life and love, let us not be neutral in the situations of injustice. Let us wrestle with racism, bigotry, and oppression, until we are living on the right side of history, until we transform our world into a beloved community. So now we have our first hymn, number 298, Wake Now My Senses. Now I'd like us to turn to page 471 in the hymn book as we say together the affirmation of the church. These are words that are designed to remind us of what we are about in this community. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, to the ends that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with each other and with God. Now our first reading today is going to be read by Myra.
Good morning. My reading this morning is by Maya Angelou. I'm sure it's been read several times in this church before. She's the American poet, activist, educator, writer, and so much more. And she died in 2014 at the age of 84. It's as good a morning reflection as any, I think. I've learned that no matter what happens or how bad it seems today, life does go on and it will be better tomorrow. I've learned that you can tell a lot about a person by the way he or she handles these three things: a rainy day, lost luggage, or tangled Christmas tree lights. I've learned that regardless of your relationship with your parents, you'll miss them when they're gone from your life. I've learned that making a living is not the same thing as making a life. I've learned that life sometimes gives you a second chance. I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw something back. I've learned that whenever I decide something with an open heart, I usually make the right decision. I've learned that even when I have pains, I don't have to be one. I've learned that every day you should reach out and touch someone. People love a warm hug or just a friendly pat on the back. I've learned that I still have a lot to learn. I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
Thanks very much for that, Myra. I feel guilty when you mention Christmas tree lights. Now it's time for the children's story. It's simply a story for children of all ages. There's no need for any child here to come to the front. I'll read it from here. Once upon a time, there was an emperor who loved glitter and fancy clothing. He spent lots of money on extravagant projects, and he didn't care very much about his people. One day, two tricksters came to his palace. They said they could make him a magical suit of clothes that only clever people could see. They said anyone who couldn't see the clothes must be foolish. The emperor thought, this sounds like the best idea ever, and he paid them to begin. The tricksters pretended to work, but they made nothing at all. When the emperor sent his helpers to check on the clothes, they saw nothing. But they were afraid to admit it, because after all, he was always right. So they pretended they could see the beautiful fabric. At last, the emperor himself went to look, and of course he saw nothing, but he didn't want to appear foolish, so even he praised the new suit. Soon it was time for a grand parade. The emperor put on the invisible suit and walked proudly through the streets. Everyone cheered, even though they saw nothing. You see, none of them wanted to appear silly. Next, a small child shouted, "But he isn't wearing anything at all." The crowd began to whisper, and soon everyone accepted the truth. The emperor had no clothes, but the emperor kept walking on, holding his head high. And the moral of this story is, like the child who called it out as it was, we should always tell the truth, even when people are afraid to. Now it's time for a second hymn, number 175, "We Celebrate the Web of Life." For my reading, I've chosen an extract from "They Thought They Were Free," the Germans, 1933 to 1945, by Milton Mayer. Mayer was an American journalist who lived in Germany. He lived there in the years after the Second World War. He spent time with a group of ordinary, everyday Germans, and his purpose was to try to understand from the inside how decent, ordinary people gradually accepted, adapted to, and participated in a system which we might feel they should have resisted. This chapter is called "But Then It Was Too Late." What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Each step was so small, you couldn't see it, developing from day to day, any more than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing, until one day, the corn is over his head. Many, many times since it all happened, I have pondered that pair of great maxims: resist the beginnings and consider the end. But one must foresee the end in order to resist or even see the beginnings. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. And it's not just fear of standing alone, that restrains you. It's also genuine uncertainty. But the one great shocking occasion, when tens or hundreds or thousands will join with you, never comes. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, yes, millions, would have been sufficiently shocked. But of course, that isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of little stops, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step C is not so much worse than step B. And if you didn't make a stand at step B, why should you make a stand at step C, and so on to step D. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were born into at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the meal times, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays, but the spirit has changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear, and the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. From They Thought They Were Free, The Germans, 1933 to 1945, by Milton Mayer. So now we'll have a period of reflection. So relax. Make sure you're sitting comfortably. You might like to close your eyes, but you don't have to. Whatever seems comfortable for you. The important thing is to just relax and take a moment to become present. Breathing in and noticing that you are breathing in. Breathing out and noticing the fact that you are breathing out. Learning to become present, because all our actions, if they're to be of any use, must come from a place of inner calm. Here are some words from Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought or grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Words from Wendell Berry. Thanks, Josh, for tracking down that recording. The title of today's address is Enough is Enough. The title came to me some months ago when I was chatting with a young lady from Ukraine. Somehow the subject of minimalism came up. We chatted about materialism, and we were discussing what do we need to do in order to live a reasonably comfortable life. We're told that in ancient times, Buddhist monks and nuns were expected to take everything they owned with them, wherever they went, just as a bird takes only its wings with it, wherever it goes. Now that ideal seems to be out of the question for most of us. A little easier would be to try Dave Bruno's 100 Things Challenge. The goal here is to combat materialism, consumerism, by keeping only 100 personal items. And you don't have to take into account shared household goods. But even that is not as simple as it sounds. What about socks and vests and underwear? Do 10 pairs of socks count as one? So what do you do if you're trying to live within the principle, enough is enough? I challenge myself and any one of us here to look around and count all the things we own. You might be surprised and shocked at the numbers. Could any of us manage to get by with even as few as 500 items? We can do the count when we get home. It's not so much a matter of numbers, it's a matter of whether we can decide to live in a way which helps us sustain life on this planet. Buying only what we really need. Passing on anything we own that's not really loved or cared for and used. And making sure that everything we do own is put to use right up to the end of its working life. We've all come across the maxim, reduce, reuse, recycle. Especially the important one, reduce. Before buying anything, ask, do I really need this? Do I really need this? So the first message for today, enough is enough. Because the future of life on Earth depends on the day-to-day actions of each one of us. But then we come to the events of recent weeks and months, and we think of the words enough is enough in a political context. We here in the Unitarian Church are a gentle, loving people, as the next hymn will remind us. We believe in freedom and reason. We don't impose a creed. We practice tolerance. But that doesn't mean that we see no difference between right and wrong. Everyone who bothers to think must see the difference between right and wrong, between honesty and dishonesty, between truth and lies. But sometimes we're inclined to let things be. We avoid the difficult conversation, afraid of the consequences, even the purely economic consequences, of taking a stand for what we know to be right. Which raises the question, what price do we place on our souls? Because this letting things be can have disastrous consequences. We all know the story of the frog and the pot of water. A frog is dropped into a pot of water. The water is slowly heated. The frog adapts to the rising temperature until it's too late. The water reaches boiling point and the frog dies. Now, if you were to take another frog and drop it into a pot of already boiling water, frog number two would jump out instantly and be saved. Looking at the world today, I believe we are like the first frog in this story. We are adapting to a low temperature rise. We're becoming acclimatized to a slow, creeping moral decline. The slow acceptance of the unacceptable. We're surrounded by reasons for us to call out loudly and often, enough is enough. Enough is enough when we see war and destruction. Enough is enough when we are witnesses to genocide, the bombing of schools and homes and hospitals, the targeting of civil infrastructure. We could become immune to these daily horrors, but we mustn't let this happen. Enough is enough when we contemplate global warming. The evidence is all around us. Dangerous thresholds are being passed. The point of no return is almost upon us. The planet is in peril. And all the while, people who have the power to stop this slide into oblivion, dispute and ignore the clear scientific evidence, the madness of it all. Enough is enough when it comes to today's unconscionable expenditure on weapons. 75 years ago, when weapons cost a fraction of what they do today, Dwight D. Eisenhower of the United States said this. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired, signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. He goes on, this world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its labourers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. And he concludes, this is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. Humanity hanging from a cross of iron. Words of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Enough is enough of the undoing of the principles of diversity, equality and inclusion. We fought long and hard for equal entitlements for women and men, equal rights for members of the LGBTQ plus community, equal respect for all people, regardless of race, colour, creed, or whatever other differences make up the variety of humanity. There should be no going back. There can be no going back. And what about the unprecedented disparity in wealth between the ultra-rich and the average person, not to mention the dreadfully poor? According to the World Inequality Report 2026, fewer than 60,000 people, less than the number of people it would take to fill Croke Park, 60,000 people control three times as much wealth as the entire bottom half of all humanity. 60,000 people controlling three times as much wealth as the entire bottom half of all humanity. Enough is enough. Political violence, the assassination of leaders, is never justified, whatever differences there may be. And when it comes to name-calling, treating political opponents with contempt, the use of language in politics which would be unacceptable even in a late-night drunken bar room, enough is enough. And there are so many other reasons why we need to collectively call a halt. The sidetracking of the United Nations, the taking over of countries by force, the curbing of freedom of the press, the undermining of confidence in electoral systems, the use of war and the threat of war, alternating with the promise of peace to manipulate the markets to the advantage of people in the know, and the offence of calling upon God to support campaigns of destruction and death. God is supposed to approve of this? Enough is enough. Now, thankfully, we in this country have been spared much of this drift into right-wing extremism. I think we can safely say that despite the differences, the people we have elected, they have in mind the common good. But when we look around, we can't afford to be complacent. We must be ever watchful. And it's encouraging to see a reaction against right-wing politics beginning to emerge, just at a time when we might have been tempted to give up hope. We've been crying out, looking out for moral leadership in the world. And in an extraordinary twist of fate, we see Pope Leo XIV appearing on the scene, and he from the troubled US. The new Pope has managed to capture the imagination of non-believers and believers alike when he speaks out courageously against greed, inhumanity and war. Now, any of us here might ask, what has this got to do with me? After all, I'm not a politician. I don't have much power. But each of us has the responsibility to exercise the power that we have. And we're reminded of this by the well-known words of Pastor Martin Niemöller. I'm sure you've all heard this quote many times before, but it's worth repeating here. First, they came for the communists, and I didn't speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I didn't speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. So let each of us set up in our own hearts a boundary line called enough is enough. May we never be afraid to speak out for what we know to be right. Amen. Now we'll have our third hymn. This is number 170. We are a gentle, angry people. Now we have some notices. First of all, thank you to everyone who's contributed to the service this morning. Everyone is invited downstairs for tea or coffee after the service. We have our weekly service of reflection in the church. This is every Wednesday from 1:05 to 1:25 p.m. The book club will gather at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday in the vestry. You'll be glad to know that the annual plant sale raised almost €1,000 for Christian Aid. So thanks everyone for that. A notice for Sunday Club parents and volunteers. There'll be another meeting on Sunday the 14th of June. If you can't be here on that day, you can join by Zoom. Just let Gavin know. His email address is in Uskild. It's on the website and it's in Josh's weekly email. Unitarian College provides courses for those interested in leading worship or other leadership roles within the church community. There'll be an inquiry session on Zoom on Wednesday the 3rd of June at 7 p.m. if anyone is interested. I have the email address here. Next Sunday there'll be communion service in advance of the main service at 11. That'll be happening at 10:15. And we have news from the managing committee that Malachy Heavahan has been elected their chair. So congratulations and best wishes, Malachy, for taking on that. And we also want to thank Denise for her being in that role for the last number of years. Finally, there is a birthday. I don't know whether Fatima is here. Maybe we'll sing happy birthday anyway in case she's logged in. Go ahead, Josh. But she can hear that later on the recordings page if she wants to anyway.
I received an email from Fergus over the week to say he is launching a book on Thursday evening in Chapters. He said, please make sure the congregation know that they are welcome to come. It's in Chapters Bookshop on Thursday night and he asked me to invite you. I'm spreading the word there and I'll put it in the weekly email as well.
So now before the final blessing, our final hymn, which is number 121, We'll Build a Land. Let us go out now into a world that needs us. Let us tread gently upon this good earth, which is not ours to spend, but ours to tend. May we have the courage to speak up when silence would amount to complicity. We say enough is enough, not in anger, but in a love that refuses to accept less than what this world and its people deserve. Let us go in peace, not in the peace of comfort. That peace will come when we build in this world a beloved community.